What I wanted to do now is I did get a couple of questions from somebody. And one of them is not too difficult, and the other is quite complicated to answer. So we'll just see what we get into. So the first question was, because I said that the causally concordant experiential result of distorted views was to have very deep ignorance. And so the person is saying, is this the cause for folks who have mental illness or mental retardation? Okay, so I don't know. I think it could be, kind of distorted views would produce more distorted mental states, or it would produce even the ignorance where it would be difficult to learn, And it can also produce the ignorance that causes us to again have more distorted views in future lives. And having distorted views is a real serious thing, because when we have distorted views, then we use those to rationalize doing the other nine of the ten non-virtues. Now, and if you look in the sutras, the Buddha spent so much time talking about correct views. And especially when you read the Pali Canon, the Buddha actually, living on our earth, he spent so much time talking about right views. And right views, when we talk about the Eightfold Noble Path, it's the first one. Yeah? Because if we don't have right views, let's say, accepting, if we have distorted views, and we're very cynical, and we don't believe in future lives, we don't believe in karma, we don't believe in Buddha potential, we don't believe that our actions have any kind of ethical dimension or, result, then with that kind of worldview, then we're going to adapt any old way, aren't we? Yeah? Or we might have other kinds of distorted views, thinking that killing is good. Yeah? If you kill the enemy, then you're going to have a good rebirth. Yeah? There's people on this planet who think like that. So you can see how problematic having that deep ignorance which causes us to have more distorted views. Okay, so that was the first question. Then the second question, the person saying there are 10 non-virtues which are pathways of action, or pathways of karma. Okay, the first 7 are actions or karma. We went through this in a previous session. And then the last 3, covetousness, mental maliciousness, and distorted views, these are mental factors, the mental factors of ignorance, anger, and attachment specifically. So they are pathways of karma, because they are pathways leading us to a rebirth, but they are not karma themselves, because they are these different mental factors. So then the question comes, well, what do we mean by karma? Okay? So the different tenet systems, the 4 philosophical tenet systems, have different views on what karma is. Okay? So, this is a big, complicated topic. I'll see if I can make it simple. Karma, all the schools agree that there's mental karma, okay? And mental karma means the intention to do the action. So the reason covetousness, malicious thought, and distorted views are not karma is because they are not the mental factor of intention. They're the mental factors of ignorance, anger, and attachment. However, when you have ignorance, anger, or attachment in the mind, when you have a primary consciousness, a mental consciousness in this case, then it also, that mental consciousness has some omnipresent, some mental factors that come with it automatically. And one of them is the mental factor of attention. So every primary consciousness is going to have the mental factor of intention. If you have a mental consciousness, okay, let's say I'm angry and I have malice and I want to, you know, say something nasty to somebody who criticized me at work today. Okay? So that mental consciousness has, you know, that's the primary mental consciousness. It has the mental factor of intention. It also has the mental factor of, let's say, spite, or the mental factor of resentment, or the mental factor of hostility. Okay? So if I have a non-virtuous mental factor in there, such as spite or hostility, something like that, the mental factor of intention that accompanies that same primary consciousness becomes non-virtuous, and that becomes the karma. So that mental factor of intention is karma. Yeah. When we have another non-virtuous mental factor manifest in the mind, then that mental factor of intention becomes negative mental karma. Okay. When we have a positive another positive emotion, or, you know, some other positive mental state, mental factor in our mind, then that mental factor of intention becomes constructive or positive mental karma. Okay? So all the tenet schools agree on that. Okay? Now, in terms of the Sautantrikas, the Chittamajans, and the Svatantrika Majjhimakas, they say that that any karma is going to be this mental factor of intention. So then the question comes, well, what about killing? Killing is a physical action. How do you explain the physical action of killing if you don't say that's karma? Okay? So according to these three schools, the mental factor that is prominent in the mind while you're doing the killing is the karma, because it's that the mental factor of intention that's prominent in the mind while you're doing that action is the karma of killing. Okay, because it's that mental factor which sets the seed or the latency in the mind stream. Yeah. Now, according to the Vibhasikas and the Prasangikas, they see it differently. And they talk much more from a conventional viewpoint. And they would say killing or prostrating are both physical actions. So you have to say that karma at some level is also physical. Okay? So what they say is, in the terms of the first three, you know, killing, stealing, and unwise sexual behavior, or their opposite, you know, protecting life, protecting property, using sexuality wisely and kindly, or any other virtuous, physical action, let's say like bowing, something like that, or making an offering, you know, you give somebody something, that they say the physical action of prostrating is form, and it's the form of the body, okay, when you're doing that action. But still, what the action of prostrating is still going to be that mental factor of intention, okay? So they separated it out to, you have the physical action of prostrating, which is form, and the action of prostrating, which is going to be that mental intention. So in that way, they're able to say that the physical actions are physical actions, they're form. If you do verbal actions, they say that those are also karma. Yeah, that those are also physical they belong to the form aggregate. In this case, they're the sound of the voice. Okay, so they would say, let's say that the verbal action of praising somebody is going to be the sound of the person's voice as they're speaking, but the action of praising somebody is going to be the mental intention that is accompanies that physical action, and which is accompanied by a virtuous mental factor. Got it? Okay. So that is a short way to answer kind of a complicated question. It also gets into the topics a little bit of what we call intention karma and intended karma. Okay? So intention karma is the mental action, that mental factor of intention. Okay, that's intention karma. The intended karma is the action of body and speech that we did motivated by the intention karma, which was that mental factor of intention accompanied by, you know, some other kind of virtuous or non-virtuous mental factor. Okay, you with me? Okay. Because you'll hear these terms sometimes, okay? Yeah, so the intention karma and the intended karma. Yeah, the intention karma is the mental factor of intention. It's the mental karma, okay? And the action that you do as a result of that is the intended karma, which is which could be physical or verbal actions. Okay? So that's that. Now, do you have any questions here, those of you who are here? We have about 2 minutes left for questions.
Do you always actualize an intention karma?
Do you always actualize an intention karma? No. Because we could have the intention to do something and then in the case of a negative action, realize, I don't want to carry that out. And so we stop ourselves. Okay? So we don't always actualize the intentions. And when we don't, if we have the intention to do something but we don't do it, we don't accumulate the karma of that actual action. But we could get some karma from that mental factor of intention to doing it. Okay? So you might have, let's say, the intention to make an offering. Yeah? So that's a positive intention. There's positive karma factor. But then the mental factor of miserliness comes. And the mind says, if I give, then I won't have it. So I'll just, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, I won't make the offering. So then, you know, even though you may have had that intention, it's a virtuous intention to give, you do not accumulate the karma of making the offering because you didn't make it. And you probably also accumulated some negative karma by having the mental factor of miserliness and the mental factor of intention that accompanied that one come up and lead us to, oh, well, no, I'll just keep it for myself.
Maybe I'm not understanding the word, but mm-hmm. What do you mean by intended? What's the difference?
Okay, so what's the difference between just like intention karma and intended karma? Intention karma is the intention, the mental factor that's motivating you, that's pushing you towards doing something. Intended karma means intended action. So it's action that you intended to do, which means that you had that intention to do the action. And here it's referring specifically to physical and verbal actions, the intended karma. Okay?
So,
yeah?
If, when you're talking about, if you had a directing a karma to be, let's say, generous or the good teachings,
uh-huh.
Do you exhaust that karma, or because you go to more teachings, you can have it in the next rebirth?
Okay. So there's the question, let's say you have some good karma to receive teachings. So you're going to the teachings. Then are you using up all that good karma to receive teachings? Well, if you are experiencing the ripening of that good karma to receive teachings, hopefully you are creating more good karma by attending the teachings. Okay? And when we do the seven-limb prayer, you know, one of the limbs is to request teachings. So that creates the karma to be able to receive teachings. Yeah. you know, when we dedicate our positive potential at the end of teachings, we're also, you know, you can also think, may I always meet with perfect spiritual masters like this and be, you know, in have the mental faculties to hear the teachings and understand them properly and practice properly. So it's important to make these kinds of dedication prayers, you know. And if we have a positive intention while listening to the teachings, then we're learning how to create the good karma that will ripen in our being able to listen to teachings again. On the other hand, you may have some karma to listen to teachings, but if you go and then you say, what are they talking about? What kind of rubbish is this? You know, my knees hurt, my back hurts, I want to go to the beach, what am I doing here? You know, bye-bye. Then, you know, that karma is getting exhausted and you're not, you know, creating kind of... Yeah. I mean, there is some good imprint by having contact with some virtuous, you know, objects, but you're not really creating the karma from your own side through intention to meet the teachings again. Okay? So we're going to have to dedicate here because our hour on the conference call is up. So let's dedicate. Those of you who are listening in with groups of people, you know, please afterwards do some discussion like this. You know, or those of you who are meditating on your own, take out, you know, some actions that you've done in the past and go through, like I was describing, you know, thinking about your motivation and why you did it and how you can avoid doing that next time and what you need to practice to change your mental state, and then go through the four opponent powers and do that purification. Okay. So we'll dedicate. Dhiti Vesmere Meru Suna Attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore. Okay, bye-bye, and see you next, we'll hear from you next Thursday. You can send questions to office@shravasti.org, and sorry for the glitch in the middle, but don't get mad about it. Okay, bye bye. Yeah, you're fine, you did. I'm sure you can do a few more questions. Yeah.
I want to return to your example about feeling, you know, having this thought to make an offering.
Uh huh.
And then, because this has happened to me at least twice this course, where I saw the song and I think, wow, I would really love to be able to take everybody out to dinner, and then I go, remember, you've only got this much money in the bank. You can't do that. And I get tangled up because I think, mm-hmm. half the time I think, well, maybe I shouldn't even have these thoughts. I need to shut the door on it. But then I think, wait a minute, I should rejoice that I'm having the thought and want to give. But at the same time, I've had this thought and wanted to give, and then I'm not, and then I'm turning my back on it and not doing it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of lost here.
Okay, yes, there's some conflicted thing where you have the wish to, the idea to, let's say, take the Sangha out to lunch, and then you think, but I only have limited finances, and so you don't do it. So I think that is going to depend on what your mental state is like when you think I have limited finances. Because if, you know, there's I have limited finances, like, well, I have a lot of money in the bank, but it's limited in any way. I'd much rather spend it so I could go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's, you know, the mental factor of miserliness. But then there is also the, you know, just realistically assessing, well, I don't have a lot of money in the bank. It's virtuous to have this aspiration. I pray in future lives where I can do that. Maybe I can't take them all out to lunch because that costs quite a lot, but maybe I can give them all an apple because maybe I can afford that. You know? Or you reduce it to something maybe smaller, something that you can do, and then you enact it in that way. And then I think, you know, there's still that virtuous intention.
Cheese Danish.
What?
I'm just kidding. Cheese Danish. She's
from what?
I just have a suggestion for that, because maybe we all get together and make a nice lunch as an offering to the fund, and we just maybe put our finances together, and in that way we can all really rejoice and offer to the fund, because really I have all sorts of food, but I cannot afford to. Maybe we can all put money together and invite all the sangha to
In that case, we all can make the problem. It's a really nice suggestion, Mariana. But I guess what I'm getting at is, I don't want to squelch the positive impulse,
right?
And yet, I have more positive impulses than I feel able to follow through on.
And it's true, you don't want to squelch the positive ones. But then the reality is, I mean, I'd like to be able to give $1 million for the temple, you know, but I can't, you know. So it's a thing of like, I think this is also, you know how they talk about bodhisattvas have aspirations that they can't carry out? Too. They have impossible aspirations. So maybe this has to be one of them. It's like, I wish I had lots of money that I could give to, you know, build lots of temples and lots of monasteries and lots of prison projects and lots of food banks and lots of everything, you know. And just, you know, maybe where that comes in is doing in the Tonglen practice. Yeah? Where you imagine doing it like that. But I think having those intentions just pop in the mind automatically, that's so wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's really neat. And then I have a second thought, like, okay.
But
joking.
But I don't want it to be that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But then you say, okay, well, I can't do everything that I would like to, but let's do some little thing, you know? Yeah? But
that just almost
with this
like,
is so much love.
Like a good example of the difference between regret and guilt. A real, sincere example. And maybe creatively, with the regret that you can't build a temple or take 50 people out, there can be something in between them. I mean, something between the apple and dinner for 100.